Flames, Stamps, NFL, MLB, Calgary's only all-sports radio. Boomer in the Morning, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Just after 8 o'clock, good morning, everybody. Pinebrook Golf and Country Club here today for their fundraising, the 18th annual fundraising golf tournament, sold out here at Pinebrook today in support of Recovery Acres. We've been talking about it this morning, a men's alcohol and drug recovery center, helping men in our city get back on their feet. If you have someone in your life or you yourself feel like it's time, check out the website, recoveryacres.org. For all the details there. 10-7 was...
The Drew Tate song, sorry.
Well, maybe he will be in. or it's the John Corner song.
Yeah, how long was that this week?
10-7 Stamps defeat the Hamilton Ticats going back to Friday night. Stampeder beat writer with the Calgary Herald and friend of the program. We appreciate it, Vicky Hall, for coming on. How are you, Vicky? Yeah, do we have Vicky?
Yes, I'm here.
There you are.
Hi, Vicky.
Hello, Vicky. So when you're sitting in the press box at McMahon and you're watching a game like that unfold where they're trading field goals, one touchdown, I'm thinking you got to be like, okay, how am I going to attack this game story? Because in many respects, there was not a lot of meat on the bone for fans on Friday.
No, there wasn't at all. And on Friday night, I had to file right at the final gun, and that was all I had. I had no extra time, so I was sweating. I was getting messages from beat writers around the country laughing at me, actually. But,
yeah.
But that's just from my selfish perspective. No, it was a dreadful game for fans and for everyone involved. I mean, the Calgary defense was exceptional, and if Stampeder fans want to be excited about something, then that was great. But offensively, not good. Special teams, not good. They were very lucky to escape with 2 points, in my opinion, and they only really did because Hamilton was so mediocre in its own right.
And you look at how close they were to having that game tied. If it were not for some people running on the field, I can't help but wonder if Tasker handles the snap for that field goal and Medlock hits it, but instead it gets botched. I don't know if the two have anything to do with one another, but I think the fans maybe helped out their home team on that night.
Well, they could have any time someone runs on the field. It's, you know, anything that you can do to ice the kicker, I suppose. It was a huge brain freeze on Hamilton's part, and it should have been automatic. I guess Calgary, you know what's going to happen at some point this season is the Stampeders are going to win or lose one on an questionable penalty or something like that, and they're going to be moaning their bad luck. Well, they had good luck the other night, so they better put that one in the... As Peter Maher would say, in the win column on that, but karma could come get them on the other end at some point in time.
So let's start, because Jeremiah Mazzoli was terrible. He goes 9 of 20, just overthrowing receivers left, right, and center. Bo Levi Mitchell, 20 of 35, 201, the lone touchdown coming off of essentially a run play for Brad Sinopoli. Was this... How much of this is on Bo and a subpar performance, and should we be giving some credit to the Hamilton defense, I guess secondary or linebacking core or what have you?
Yeah, and Orlando Steinhauer for devising a great game plan. Basically, with no John Cornish in the lineup, Hamilton decided to rush 3 much of the night and drop 9 back into coverage and basically forced Bo to take anything, just kind of the short little games, and forced him to hand the ball off and made it very difficult for him to go downfield. And it was a great game plan. I mean, it worked. Calgary just couldn't. Hamilton's front three were good enough to disrupt the run game and make things happen, and then Calgary couldn't make anything happen downfield. I mean, it was also both receivers and everything, but they tested him on this night, and I think we saw him kind of look a little human for maybe the first time. You know, he's still a young quarterback, and he was facing a really good defense and a very well-devised defense. Hamilton was coming off the bye, and they had 2 weeks to think about that. And I'm sure Kent Austin had his hand in there as well. He might be kind of grumpy sometimes, but he's a very good coach.
And you know what? And I guess credit where it's due, because you look at what Bo Levi did, and at 20 of 35, like we mentioned, there was no big, you know, 80-yard gainer to... to anybody this week. But he did a fairly good job in dumping off when he had to, avoiding the sack, and really when you look at it, was pressured, but was not sacked a ton in this game.
Yeah, the thing that impresses me most, Dean, about him is that he makes decisions that seem way above his age. And I don't know if this is why working with Dave Dickinson, working with Jeff Garcia in the offseason, working with John Huffnagel, but he slides when he has to. He throws the ball out of bounds when there's absolutely nothing there. He takes the safe little dump pass to Rob Cote when he has to. I mean, a lot of times you don't see that with a young quarterback. You see them making very reckless decisions. And it's kind of funny because Dave Dickinson during training camp was complaining about Bo being a little bit reckless. And so far during the game, we haven't seen that. We've seen a guy much more poised and not making those, just not really forcing it and not throwing the dumb interception. So in that way, I think you can credit Bo the other night for not losing the game for them. I think the defense won the game for them, but Bo didn't lose the game for them, and a lot of young quarterbacks would have in those circumstances.
Vicki Hall from the Calgary Herald, Stampeder beat writer, is our guest here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. You mentioned Rob Cote. Anytime you have some injuries and new bodies come in, other guys get a chance to kind of strut their stuff. And I know that it was not a huge night if you were to just look on the paper and on the stat line and look at what Rob Cote did. He had four catches, 31 yards. But his night, the one run that he gave the stiff arm and got around the corner and blocking and all that, I thought it was a great night for Rob Cote.
It was a great night for Rob Cote, and he's one of those guys. I mean, I was in a bit of an argument with somebody in the press box the other day about that. I mean, he's not flashy. He probably isn't going to get 40-yard gain on any given pass or play or whatever, but he's so reliable. And, the other thing, Dean, is that so many of those Canadian fullbacks, quote-unquote, or whatever they're calling them this year, they get hurt all the time. It's the kind of position that's very grinding on the body, and it's punishing and everything. And Rob is in there week after week, and he really, really helps with the blocking. And he doesn't deserve it. He doesn't get the credit he deserves for John Cornish's numbers. I mean, Rob Cote is usually in there on first down. He's usually helping him out. So he's one of those players that's not super flashy, but super reliable. And if he gets hurt, everybody freaks out because how do you replace him? So, and he's a hometown kid, so that's kind of nice to see as well.
They do not have John Cornish, and right now they don't have anyone capable of replacing what John Cornish does. Matt Walter, 11 carries, 56 yards. Jock Sanders, just the one carry. There was very little in terms of run game, which I guess that's going to help Bo Levi Mitchell, too. We talk about the defense for Hamilton. When they don't need to respect the run like they do with Cornish in there, it makes things a little bit easier for defenses. And again, no John Cornish coming up for this game on Thursday from the looks of things. I guess just the state of the run game without him and what what are we looking at here? Is this one more week, two more weeks? There's no way to know.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way to know. And it was really interesting yesterday at practice last night to hear the guys talking. And they're all very concerned. I mean, they all watched Dimitri Zupas last year. It would look promising, and then it would get bad again. And he had to retire at the age of 27. So no one is saying that John Cornish is on that path. That's, let's make that clear. But the guys can't help but worry. And John sent out a tweet last night talking about rising above tough times and things like that. Obviously, he had quite a significant setback this weekend, and we have no idea when he's going to come back. I mean, it could be Labor Day. It could be before then. Who knows? So they're going to have to learn to live without him. I mean, in the short term, Matt Walter, I think he's an underrated back. He's got a lot of power, a lot of explosion, and his yards per carry weren't bad the other night, but he's not going to be John Cornish, and other teams are not going to respect him like John Cornish. So, at some point in time, they might, I mean, Martel Mallett's still around. I'm not quite sure if he's healthy at this time, so at some point they might bring someone else in, but it's not Matt's fault at this point. They're going to have to work on the game plan, and they sure have their hands full with Edmonton, because that defense, my goodness, Odell Willis, I mean, they face a challenge this week for sure, and I'm really interested to see what Dave Dickinson comes up with.
It's funny looking around the league, isn't it, Vic, at the number of impact players there are and how many are former Stampeders?
It sure is, right? I mean, they seem to have, I mean, even Hamilton, C.J. Gable, he was in one of Calgary's camps. I mean, and it all kind of goes back to John Murphy. I mean, he finds a lot of these guys. He's a lot of people. It was hilarious one day at during training camp when they had the mock game. One of the cheerleaders saw him in the stands, and they saw him with his laminated depth chart. And yeah. She came up to him and was talking to him about how he must be the biggest super fan ever and all this stuff. She had no idea he worked for the team. And I thought that was quite significant. Like, I don't think many people in Calgary know who this guy is and what he does. But, yeah, it's amazing how many former Snaps are the stars around the league.
Just to double back to the run position, because the one thing that we've learned is that, and it sounds maybe disrespectful, but the role of international running back is one that's easily replaced. The one of Canadian running back, not so much. You could find, and again, disrespect to Matt Walter, but Canadian guy, you could probably find a guy that could come in and be a tremendous back for you, but it's a ratio buster, and that makes things a little bit more difficult. Do you think that John Huffnagel and crew would be looking at that, being putting in an American at the running back spot and then having to put a Canadian somewhere else?
Oh, sure, and if they have to, they will. Like, I mean, they can mess some things around on defense if they want. There are ways they could drop an American out of the receiving core. I mean, they don't want to do any of this, but they can do it. But I think that they believe in that and they're going to keep trying that. But if this is a long-term issue, as I said, like if say this does go past Labor Day or whatever, and if they're not winning, they'll look at everything. And obviously that's always on the table. But Calgary has a luxury to have that position as a national, right? Quote unquote national. A Canadian, make the running back a Canadian position. But absolutely, it's so important to have a run game that you can depend on. If they have to, they'll switch it out. No doubt.
Yeah. So with Edmonton coming up on Thursday, I know that Chris Jones has already got himself a closed practice, or I'm not even sure how many there are. Huffnagel hasn't gone there yet, but this one has everything you could have wanted. You wish, obviously, John Cornish could be a part of it regardless, but two top teams in the West. The last, let me ask you, you've been in both cities. When was the last time, and it's early in the season, but when's the last time these two teams were the most formidable teams in the division?
I can't even remember. I mean, maybe 2002, kind of, like, around then. But BC was always sniffing around as well, right? You know, you never knew what you were going to get from BC. But it's been so long that we've seen this. And Chris Jones' factor can't be underestimated. I mean, everybody sloughs it off around there. But Chris Jones left the Stampeders in 2011 for a lateral move to Toronto, and he blindsided everybody by doing it, and there's a lot of bad blood between the two sides. So my favorite comment from yesterday was Nick Lewis was saying that he figured that Chris Jones closed the practice because he doesn't want to go to the Edmonton practice, but he doesn't want the Edmonton reporters to know that because he's going to come down to Calgary and watch Calgary's practice and order a Huff burger. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got everything that you could possibly want. It's going to be a great one. The short week will probably rear its head too, right? There's no way to know right now, but anytime, it's the one thing that we as fans we cannot appreciate when you hear them talk about a short week, what that really means. Yeah, it's only a day or two, but to go on a Thursday is a lot different than going on a Saturday.
Yeah, and Micah Johnson, who is a defensive tackle, who had an incredible game the other night, He was talking on Twitter last night about how sore he still is, and especially for the guys who are on the line and basically have repeated car collisions over and over and over again all night long. If you take a day of recovery away from them, it really hurts. It makes it a lot more difficult. So they had a very gentle kind of walk-through practice where they were sort of running yesterday but sort of not. Mm. So Huff is trying to help them. But, yeah, I think you might see that on Thursday night. And I think Edmonton has an extra day of rest compared to Calgary, and that might have an impact. And these guys have to get on a bus and go up to Edmonton, which I know is really minor. But when you're feeling that sore and not feeling good, who knows, that could come into it as well.
Keon Raymond, Daron Mayo, I know that Juwan Simpson went down with kind of a weird freak-looking kind of a thing. Any updates there, Vic?
Juwan says he's good. I mean, he does have a hip pointer, and I know those are very, very painful, but he says he's fine. He's ready to go. Daron Mayo has a hamstring, but surprisingly, Huff said that he thinks he's ready to go. Keon Raymond, who had a helmet to the thigh, he was saying that he was going to be fine, but yesterday that had turned and he seemed a little down and said he might go, but I wasn't super convinced by what he was saying. So I would say no Raymond, but Mayo and Simpson would be my expectation.
Vicky, you mentioned the defense. How impressive is what they're doing, never mind the fact that they're missing two of their linebackers?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, they have, granted, they haven't been playing super strong teams. I mean, Toronto didn't look that good, and they've had three teams from the East, but they've allowed one touchdown, and that was in garbage time against Montreal. Like, I think it was on the last play of the fourth quarter. So to do that is pretty incredible, and you can tell that these guys have all bought into Rich Spielberg's scheme, and they're very excited to play for Rich. If you're a veteran and you're playing for Rich Spielberg and he respects you, he gives you a lot more space to work and to do your, not do your own thing, but be creative out there and be athletic. And so the veteran guys love him, and they've got a very talented group there. So, yeah, this defense right now is the strength of that team, especially with no John Cornish and no Mo Price. For as much as we talk about the offensive guys, the defense, led by Charleston Hughes, is quite a force.
Thank you, Vicky. Appreciate it. You enjoy your bus ride up to Edmonton. Will you be riding a bus?
No, actually, I'll be driving the Herald vehicle.
Oh, okay.
So, I'll be the person who's trying not to speed. Cause I think my last trip up to Edmonton, I got a photo radar ticket for a company. So,
well, you're reckless Vicky Hall. That's what we call you. Thanks, Vic.
Exactly.
We'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You bet. There's Vicky Hall. You can read her, obviously, in print every day in the Herald or go online, calgaryherald.com. The Stamps get a win. They are 3-0. The Eskimos get a big win over the Bombers, 26-3. They are 4-0. And two stingy defenses. We'll be going at it coming up on Thursday night.
We talked about the Eskimos last week with our boy Morley Scott, who bum-dialed us.
That's right.
I believe, the interview of the season. We're going to get a brass trophy for that or something. He had pointed out 8 picks they had heading into that game against Winnipeg. Probably defense 1 and 2 and maybe teams 1 and 2 in the CFL at this juncture.
They crushed the Bombers. Again, we were talking with Arash, and we'll have Arash coming up at 8:45 this morning, our CFL insider. For the Bombers, things going pretty well. There was a lot of talk, hey, look at the Bombers, here they come. And then they play a team like Edmonton. Jefferson, 2 sacks. Alexander, 1 sack. Willis, 1 sack. McCoyle, 1 sack. They were all over
pressure.
Drew Willey. And they are, hey, that's a Chris Jones team, man. They are bloodthirsty in that linebacking core, and they'll be coming after Bo Levi Mitchell big time.
And as good as Winnipeg was, we knew the depth is not there. We know their Canadians aren't good enough. It's a nice turnaround given they've matched last year's win total, but no one's thinking that was the team that was going to win the West. It was just a nice start to the season. And I mean, that is that fair to say?
Sure. I'm not going to debate you.
Very good.
I'm too tired.
It's Monday. No debates.
See, I can't debate you. I can't debate that. We're out at Pinebrook this morning, the home course for the Recovery Acres 1835 house. Little golf event going on today, their big fundraising golf tournament, the 18th annual. She's sold out. We're teeing it up today. The course, the grounds crew, working diligently to get the course all set for us. And we're gonna absolutely, we probably should get some sort of a bet going.
You and I.
With the people that bought us, if you will. The winning bid.
Yeah.
I mean, we need strokes and a lot of strokes, because my game is in pure disarray, I'm sure.
And when, if there's any sort of fogginess or we're not sure, just give us a couple more strokes. Yeah,
yeah,
we will get another stroke on that.
No,
yeah.
That was clear.
I get 3 strokes on this hole. I'm sorry. Right. Did you say a bogey? I was pretty sure that's an eagle.
We are coming back. We'll hear from, like I say, Arash Badani before 9 o'clock. The Toronto Maple Leafs avoiding arbitration with one of their blue liners this morning.
Ooh.
Details when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud to be Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. I got a feeling way down inside.
It is 8:25. A good Monday morning to you, John Fogarty, the artist of the day. Boomer in the Morning, live from beautiful Pinebrook Golf Course. Forecast looking like it's going to clear up a little bit, a little moisture now, but hopefully blue skies. Is we are out here for Recovery Acres and their annual golf tournament. Recovery Acres Society has provided a highly effective residential treatment program, helping over 13,000 men in our city overcome drug and alcohol abuse. The 1835 house, located in a residential community in Southwest Calgary. They also provide transitional housing at other Calgary locations. Fantastic cause to get behind, and Boom and I are teeing it up this afternoon. Can't wait.
I'm back.
There you are.
Yeah.
I was worried about you there.
Were you?
No, not really.
I'm here. I'm ready.
This is good. We're going to have a day here, I'm telling you. These clouds are starting to clear up a little.
Oh, sure. So you were where this weekend?
Vancouver, sir. You were in Red Deer. I was in Vancouver.
Yeah, and that's, you know what? That's fitting.
It is kind of fitting.
You're very Vancouver, and I'm very Red Deer.
Well, you've spent time previously in Red Deer, as I've spent a lot of time in Vancouver over the last 6 years, being in Penticton and or Abbotsford. Hockey season comes to an end. Down the highway, uh-huh. Vancouver, big city, yeah. Lots to do.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And you went to your favorite steak place in Red Deer?
It's right in the hotel.
I shouldn't say steak place. This is
steak sandwich.
A world-famous steak sandwich.
It is. If you want to go back, if it's time machine.
Yeah.
If you want to go back in time,
okay.
You go to the little lounge restaurant at the Black Knight Inn in Red Deer.
Yeah.
The furniture hasn't changed. The decor, the music, the menu.
Clearly the recipe hasn't changed either. Still world famous.
Nothing has changed. But yeah, it's like a $9 steak sandwich. It's the best steak sandwich you're ever going to have in your flipping life.
And the Sutter boys are all in good shape?
Oh, sure. Yeah. How many
of the seven brothers were in attendance?
I didn't see. No, I think I saw all of them.
Really?
But there's two of them that look really alike.
Yeah, the twins.
They're twins.
Those ones tend to look alike.
And I think I saw both of them.
But it could have been the same one twice.
Huh? Yeah, it could have been.
Different shirts, maybe. I don't know.
But no, raising a ton of money up there for great causes here. They're raising money today. Look at us. We're just
a bunch of philanthropists.
Modern day heroes. I say it many, many times.
Heroes is a strong word, but I agree.
The text line is wide open, 960-960 from your mobile phone. If there's something you want to get in, this one, how's the dishwasher, Boomer?
Yeah, I saw this last night. It's Sunday. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen Boomer since Thursday. I'll see what's going on his Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Not many tweets. I saw the steak sandwich.
I don't reply to your texts.
So no, no.
The only way.
Actually, yeah, you told me to lose your phone number, so I just look at your Twitter
feed. Just go to the Twitter. Yeah, so basically, over the better part of Saturday night and Sunday, the dishwasher, not really cleaning the old dishes.
So you come back from Red Deer and, yeah, oh, so honey, like, there's an issue with the dishwasher.
We'll run it through again. See, maybe the soap thing didn't open or whatever.
Sure.
No, it's covered with stuff. There's something going on. See, here's the problem.
Mm.
I was able to figure out, partway through tearing apart the entire dishwasher, all the racks, the thing in the bottom, taking everything out. And I'm not equipped to do this.
No, not at all.
Like, no.
I saw a photo and you had all these pieces on the counter.
Yeah, there's pieces.
Why are you doing that? You're going to make it worse.
Yeah, there's stuff everywhere. But, you know, you got to at least give it a try, right? It turns out I had a little spitty cup for my sunflower seeds.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, if you're watching TV or for me, sometimes you're in the rig or whatever, you just need a spitty cup. Yeah. So I had a bottle of water. Like one of those, like a aluminum bottle.
Yep.
So I had filled that guy up. And I think somebody just put it into the dishwasher without tipping her out first.
Those seeds aren't going to do well in there.
So, yeah, it was clogged with sunflower seeds. So I had to get out the tools and get in there.
Now, is the problem solved, or have you created an entire new set of problems trying to put this all back together?
No clue.
No idea.
No. It was basically, I tore it apart. I couldn't find any, because I cleaned a bunch of the stuff out. So I did find some of it, but then it wasn't draining. So then I took the thing off underneath and it wasn't clogged. And I tried to do the thing and the hoopy-doo and all that. I think it's back together.
Maybe.
I think it's back together, but I'll say this. Even by giving it a shot, I'm a little more of a man today.
You may be a little bit more of a man, but I've never seen a face so fraught with frustration and anger than the one in your vine with the dishwasher in the background.
Yeah,
like, you look like if someone gave you a golf club or a baseball bat, you would have taken it right to that particular appliance and ended it.
Yeah, I was beyond the anger. Because you go through the different, there's kind of confusion and then
frustration.
There's frustration. And then there's just the lack of confidence in what you're doing. And then you know you're going to lose some parts. And then it's just straight up bewilderment. So again, I tip my hat to all these people that do this.
Yeah.
Installing microwaves or fixing dishwashers. Or
this is the second appliance you've had an issue with.
I got a guy coming to look at my air conditioner today because that's way out of my pay scale.
Wow.
I'm a mess. What are you dealing with, Pinder?
I got an engine light came on in the old vehicle, so I'll have to take that into the shop.
Well, let's go take a look.
Oh, no, you're not touching that thing.
We'll fire the hood up.
No, I'm your man.
I'm real good with that stuff.
You're my boy, but not for that.
You got any tools? What do you think it is? Is it the Scammon a Binner rotor?
I don't even know what that is, no.
It might be the Flitz capacitor.
So what happens is that light comes on.
Yeah.
And so me, knowing my car intimately well, that's when I call my mechanic. That's what that light does. So the problem is it needs to see the mechanic. That's all I know.
All right. Well,
so the boys up at Continental will be seeing me soon.
I just thought you'd have a little more faith in my ability. Text line, good morning. I know it's summer, but would love to hear more Flames talk.
We haven't talked about the Flames today.
No, we really haven't.
I ran into Bulma in Vancouver, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw Bulma last week, or sorry, Colburn last week at that Shaw shootout promoting.
Hates being a Flame.
Colburn loves it here.
Hates Calgary.
That's not what he said at all. No,
going hopes to get into the arbitration.
No, he says this thing will be done before arbitration if all things goes well. Calgary guy, and then chatted with Bulma. He's got a similar situation. RFA
hates Calgary.
Has been qualified.
Can't
loves
wait to
Calgary.
Leave.
Enjoys the room. I thought had a strong season, and he needs a deal. So he was in good spirits and having a good summer.
He's just an RFA. There's no arbitration.
Correct.
For Bulma,
that is
clear,
correct.
I guess.
Yeah. That's so similar but different. There's your Flames update.
And the further to it, it's do you see Weidman or Jones still with the Flames by season opener? What you hearing? Cheers from NS, which I'm guessing is Nova Scotia.
I don't know what else it could be.
Yeah.
Like NS?
Yeah.
No. It's got to be Nova Scotia.
I'm going to go with Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
I think Jones will be. I don't know how else, because he's a right winger and you don't have a bunch of them.
No.
And he is what he is, and he's making dough.
Yep.
But you know, you gotta have somebody on that right side. Dennis Weidman's an interesting one because I think it's easy just to write him off. You know, oh, he had a bad year, and now he's got to go. He's making too much money. All of this. I feel like what are the options? So let's assume that Dennis Weidman, you don't want him to be part of the Flames for whatever reason. So are you going to buy him out? Is that the answer?
Well, too late for that. You had a compliance one you could have used, so you're not buying him out.
So you're not buying him out. What is the potential trade? Is there going to be some sort of a trade? I don't know. I think that you have an asset right now that has diminished in value. And if you're looking to move him or to maximize anything in the way of a deal or this guy, you keep him around and you play him.
That's actually a really good point, because he had a really good November, and then the wheels fell off.
It's one of those things where there are certain guys, and for a while it was Butler, and for a while it was Bomeister. There are guys that, just for whatever reason, Stajan was a guy for a while, and now he's fine.
Yeah.
Just get into that pocket where they can't do much right.
They're the black sheep of the fan base, right?
They're going to be one of those guys that's going to get hammered on. And right now it's Dennis Weidman for any number of reasons, whether it's because of the dough he makes.
Well, I would say it's 5.25 million reasons why. If he was a $2 million defenseman, no one would be on him.
So why are we worried, though? In one breath, they're talking about having to make the cap floor. But on the other hand, the same people will be all choked because he's making over $5 million. They're not a cap team. It's not like Dennis Weidman is keeping the Flames from getting some stud player. I don't understand, especially now. Maybe when they were in that cap space, and because the guy at the time was Corey Saric. Boy, when you get that money back off that Saric deal, or when Matt Stajan's deal comes up, I don't see why $5 million for Weidman is of any consequence at all right now.
Well, they're still under the floor. Now they'll get there with Bulma, Colburn, and I suppose depending on what kind of deal Ortio has, they're going to get there.
Sure,
but you make a valid point. If you trade him now, you're not getting peak value, and B, you're going to have to go inherit another $5 million to get back to where you were over the floor.
I think you start the season with the guy.
I
don't honestly know if the Flames themselves are as down on him as everybody else seems to be. I don't know.
I would. I think you make a really good point.
Thanks,
Ryan. The best way to get any value for this guy is to have him playing well. And if he's playing well, then maybe you don't need to trade him after all. They aren't exactly swimming with top four defensemen there. He can be one.
$5.25 million.
It's over $1 million more than Mark Giordano makes.
Yeah, and I mean that you almost can't compare the two because Gio was an RFA and Weidman was essentially going to be a UFA. But look at what defensemen make nowadays. Go back to July 1st. It was not that long ago. What did Niskanen make? What did Brooks Orpik make? What is that type of money? That's what it is. Is it too much? Yeah, for who he is, it is probably too much. But I don't get why, and again, I'm just repeating myself here, what's the big deal? He's not keeping you from having Jonathan Toews in your lineup.
No. Oh, we can't. Gaudreau has to go to the minors because Weidman's money has put them. No, they're not in that position at all. That is not the situation this team is in.
So that's the scoop there. We had Curtis Glencross on the show, Thursday?
That's right.
And he talked about his conversation.
Sounds like once the arbitration gets done with Colburn, early August, they'll get going.
Sink their teeth into that one. 2.55 is what he makes. Open market, he would double it, I would think. Get into that five million range, right? For a guy that's in that 20-goal range, great skater, plays with a bit of bite to his game. I said this to Kerr on Friday. My kind of belief is that this is a guy that's coveted by the old regime and the new regime, meaning that Brad Treliving and Craig Conroy and Brad Pascal, that these guys are on the Glencross You know, he's part of what we're doing. He's part of what we're building towards. So we'll expect the deal's going to get done there. And for Glencross, it's just a matter of where is he at in terms of finding happy ground? Because he's going to want to make some money. And you know that he feels like he gave a sweetheart deal looking back.
Because he did.
And he did. So how much of a hometown discount should he be prepared to give up to remain a Flame? And for the Flames, how much should they look and say, okay, well, here's based on what you did last time, and you want to be here, this is what we're prepared to do.
And I wonder if he really wants to be here that badly, if he's not adamant on keeping his no-move clause. Not a modified, not a limited, his no-move clause. Because this is a guy, if he didn't have one of those, how marketable an asset would he have been last trade deadline? You get two playoffs worth and a full season of Glencross.
But that was part of his negotiation. That's why it took less.
Of course. Absolutely. That's a major part of it. Absolutely. And if you're the Flames, he's a good player. Does he fit your window of the team that will be in the playoffs down the road? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
What does he look like in 3-4 years when this team theoretically should be competitive?
And there's the term, right? If you can get a 3-year deal and you're paying him good money, much like anything else, does it matter?
Just like Englund and Raymond.
Hiller.
If you're in that window of still turning the ship around, that's probably fine. But I wouldn't want to see big term and big money when you're going to be into the years of renewing Sean Monahan on a new deal. If Bennett needs a new deal, where TJ Brody will be eating much more cap space. Yeah. Mark Giordano is going to need a new deal pretty quickly here. Those would be priorities and core pieces that I would put further ahead of Glencross. So it'll be an interesting negotiation. Sounds like it gets going in August.
And we're pretty close, yeah, to the Colburn thing. Maybe it gets done this week. August 1st is, what, next Friday?
And you had mentioned that the Leafs actually got some work done today.
They get Cody Franzen signed. It's a one-year deal worth $3.3 million. This, I've been waiting for the Franzen has been traded to Team X.
Yeah,
kind of deal to come out any moment, and I think this even I'm shocked if he's a Leaf this year. I think this deal gets it done, retains his rights. But you look at where the Leafs are, how they've utilized him, what he is. I know even going back a couple years, he was a guy that just did not seem to be someone that they coveted there. Riley, Phaneuf, Stefan Robidaux they brought in. Jake Gardner, I think, is above the curve there for him as well. So I wonder if maybe Cody Franzen is a guy that with this deal now becomes a little bit easier to move.
Yeah, well, I think it's an asset retention is what it is. I think they would like to shake a D-man, whether it's him or Gardner. 3.3 is a lot for a guy that's playing 4, 5, 6. But again, look at July 1st. That's, you know, the Flames are going to pay a 5, 6, 7, 2.9 a year. You know, Derek Englund's not a top four D-man. He never has been in the NHL. Unless something magically changes at 32, he won't be one. So this is what it takes to retain the asset. So be it.
We'll come back when we return. A little CFL chatter. Arash Madani is our CFL insider. He'll break down what we saw in week number 4, an awful start for the Montreal Alouettes. The Bombers, the bloom is off the rose. The Lions continue to roll, and the first home win in the history of the Ottawa Redblacks all coming up. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
My, oh my, I'm a restless guy. Got a home everywhere I go.
Proud to be Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Baby, 8:44 Monday morning. Fogarty. Coming up in the next hour, we'll hear from Bob Paley, Kananaskis Golf Course. Going to get back on its feet. The flood ravaged the, basically every hole but about 4 or 5.
32 of the 36, which is incredible because a lot of courses were hit around this neck of the woods, but it was, a lower-lying 3 holes, or we had to switch this 9 over here. 32 of 36.
And it looks like something out of a movie. If you've not seen it, you should go and Google some of the pictures that are out there to see what kind of damage was done. Going to be fixed, going to take some time, but it is on its way to becoming, one of the best courses that you can golf in our province and in Western Canada. So Bob Paley, the details coming up at 9:25. Rob Laird will join us just after 9 o'clock, about 9:05, Capital Director with Discovery Acres. We are here today at Pinebrook, the Golf and Country Club. It's the Recovery Acres, the fundraising golf, I always say charity because so much of what we do is that. It's the fundraiser, the golf tournament today for the 1835 House, a men's alcohol and drug recovery center here in our city. Over 13,000 men have come through the doors and have successfully gotten their lives back on track with the help of 1835 House. We'll get into the details on that. And here's a little something for you. Now, how flexible is your day today? Have you got some space? You got some time to get away? Because here's the deal. We've had the golf course, the golf event is sold out. A lot of the corporate sponsors have bought their spots. We got word just a few minutes ago that there's one foursome that can't make it today. So rather than just have one less foursome on the course,
we won't do that.
Here's the deal. Can you and three buddies, or have you got a group of four that can come out to Pinebrook today and tee it up at 1 o'clock? A 1 p.m. tee off here today.
Got lunch right before.
Got some lunch, a little dinner afterwards. If you can do her, give us a call, 240-4444. Give us your name. Off the air, and we'll pass it on to the people here if you want to come out for a nice little free round of golf and support a great cause. Why not? 1 o'clock out at Pinebrook, 240-4444 is the number to call. Earlier this morning, our CFL insider, Arash Madani. What a week it was, Arash. Not a lot of drama. Go figure the Argos and the Red Blacks would, in many ways, give us the best drama. But before we go there, we'll start with what was supposed to be the marquee game of the week, the Edmonton Eskimos and Winnipeg Blue Bombers. There was very little there for the Blue Bombers by the time the Edmonton Eskimos were done with them. 26-3, your take, I guess, in general on the Eskimos and that defense that just gave Drew Willie nothing.
Yeah, I mean, boom, that's a vintage Chris Jones defensive performance. There's no question about it. And I think, you know, you look at it now, Edmonton's 4-0. They have a lot of new faces there, and there are a lot of GMs asking themselves, why for the last decade have we not really seriously looked at Chris Jones as a head coach? Because look at what they've done with not the best personnel either. You know, Darius Bowman hasn't played all that well. Fred Stamps has been on and off, kind of hurt and not really playing at his best, and they have a rookie running back at the helm. But that right there, that defensive performance is exactly what you would expect from a Chris Jones coach team. Kyle Walters, Winnipeg's general manager, earlier in the week to Gary Lawless of the Winnipeg Free Press, boom, had said, you know, yeah, like, you know, we're happy with 3-0, don't get us wrong, but a couple of things could have gone the other way and we'd be 1-2 in this spot. You get the sense there when you watch the Bombers, there's a lot of good things there, but then the margin for error is very, very slim. And they missed a couple of wide open shots, receivers dropping balls, et cetera, you know, footballs going off the ball carrier's helmet into the hands of Odell Willis for a touchdown. You really have to execute there, because otherwise there's not much that you can fall back on. So still very early, obviously, but there were some very learning signs in that game from both sides.
Big one coming up this weekend, obviously. Well, it's Thursday, never mind weekend. The Edmonton Eskimos and Stampeders. We'll talk about the Stamps, I guess, in a moment. But first, Henry Burris gets his Red Blacks a win. Again, nothing real pretty about this week in the CFL, but the Red Blacks will take it. It only seems right that it would come back. The crowd was jacked, and they were jammed in Ottawa. It just seems right that they would get a win.
Yeah, I was in the park for that. I mean, that was a real neat, historic night. There were a lot of hiccups outside of the football scene. People are going to call it growing pains. You know, they didn't have ATMs working, boom. The concession lines were 45 minutes long. They ran out of food and beer. The sewage backed up in the women's bathroom. You know, they had 7 years to get this figured out, and they still didn't for opening day. But from a football side, that place was going bananas. The people were thrilled. I mean, consider this, man. They never sold out a game once the last time around during the Renegades era. Four years, not one sellout. And the only sellout so far in the CFL in 2014 came in Ottawa. Go figure. Who would have thought that a team scoring zero touchdowns would come out with a win? But that's the kind of week it was in the Canadian Football League. You know, the BC Lions scored five touchdowns. Every other team combined for four. Henry Burris and company will take it. I'll tell you something else, Boom. Without Henry Burris on that team, I don't know what that Red Blacks offense is, but they got themselves a win, and they're in first place in the East Division, having scored one touchdown in the last 11 quarters.
Yeah.
Amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah, it's impressive, all right. On the other side of the ball, no Chad Owens for the Toronto Argonauts, and there too. They couldn't find a way to get things going. Adams gets a touchdown in the fourth quarter. What do you make of the offense minus Chad Owens for Toronto?
Minus Chad Owens, minus Andre Dury, and minus Jason Barnes. And with Owens and Barnes, boom, as we first reported last week, they're gone for at least six weeks. They're on the six-game injured list. They could be hauled back. I doubt they will from a cap standpoint unless things get very urgent there. And so they're going to be without, you know, three of their weapons effectively until September. That's a big loss. Scott Milanovic didn't want to hear any of it. He said that's an excuse. He said there was no reason for his offense to play as poorly as they did. You know, that wasn't on Ricky Ray. Outside of the one mistake, the one pick Ray had, that wasn't on the quarterback. And the defense played exceptionally well. I mean, look, Siobhan Walker got off on one big run, one, the entire night. And, you know, the defense put that team put the Argos in a position to have some success, and the offense did nothing with it. So the issue now becomes, boom, there, you're not going to have your three main guns around until September. You have to find a way. They just added Maurice Mann into the mix, a guy who's been on the couch since 2012. So they need an upgrade in personnel, and they need their offense to get going and fast, because it's not going to get any easier. And this has been now three straight weeks where they've sputtered. I mean, three or four weeks where they've sputtered. So that's got to get corrected real fast.
Real test for Scott Milanovic and I suppose even Jim Barker and his
group. I'd say more Jim Barker at this point, boom, because you got to bring in some guys who are ready to play. And I'm just not sure Maurice is your answer right now.
to BC, 41-5. They unload on the Montreal Alouettes. Kevin Glenn, 301 yards, two touchdowns, doing what he does. An impressive game for Emmanuel Arsenault, to say the least. Three touchdowns, 145 yards in the air. And that Montreal to BC thing that has always been just continues.
Don Matthews couldn't win there. Mark Trestman couldn't win there. Jim Popp couldn't win there. And now Tom Higgins can't win in BC place. That may be a neat narrative, but the Owls are a mess. And the Owls are in big trouble. And they got to figure it out and fast. I mean, the difference, the disparity between what's going on in the East and what's going on in the West is just absolutely unbelievable right now. I mean, the West is just so far superior. But, you know, and you have an expansion team. Granted, we're only 4 weeks in, but an expansion team in first place. Boom, I covered the Alouettes when I first broke into the league, you know, fresh out of college. I've been following them since 2000, 2001 when I started covering them. I've never seen them this bad. And a lot of it goes back to what they have there at quarterback. Troy Smith could not be more ineffective if you tried. And, you know, do you go with Tanner Marsh this week? That's going to be the question in Montreal. You know, did they have the bye week? Do you make that transition? Do you, you know, do you pull the hook on Smith? I'm not sure that's going to accomplish too much, but, you know, immediately. But let's remember with the Alouettes. When you fire your offensive coordinator in training camp or at the end of training camp, what you've effectively done is you wiped out any kind of progress, any kind of install, anything you wanted to do in training camp was a waste. So they're basically 3 weeks behind the ball, and then they have to go into a city where they've never won before. That's got to get figured out, and it's got to get figured out soon, because as you know, as behind the eight ball as they were at the beginning of the season, they're still not there, obviously, not even being able to put up a touchdown in that game in Vancouver.
There's a lot of talk about why the hook didn't come a little sooner when you're in BC. I mean, Troy Smith certainly had a lot of time to kick it around before they eventually, he had to throw a pick essentially to force his coach's hand.
Because the game was still within reach. You know, it's still, I know it sounds crazy, but you know, you're still down 24-3. I mean, three touchdowns is not out of the realm of possibility in the CFL, you know, in football, especially in the CFL. One special team score, one defensive, one defensive shot, and suddenly you're in the conversation. And if he's going to be your guy, then he's going to be your guy. But the question now is whether or not that organization is going to have the confidence in Troy Smith, because, you know, fellas, last year was learning, and, you know, he's got to take over from Calvillo, on and on and on. But is Troy Smith making any progress? And that over this bye week is going to be a piece of evaluation of, can we move forward with this guy, excuse me, or can we not? And that's what we're going to find out when, you know, with the Owls having the extra 7 days off.
Well, here's the thing, and like you said, you've covered that team for a long time, and you've covered the league, obviously, very closely. I mean, is there any other, I mean, is there a quarterback out there that's sitting idle that maybe is just kind of lurking in the weeds that you could bring in as even a stopgap or to help Troy Smith, even as kind of like a, you know, like a Crash Davis type of an influence right now?
Who's just sitting on the couch. Hard to think of a name that's going to jump off the page. I mean, the closest thing that there was to one was Jason Moss, and he's now on Toronto's coaching staff.
Yeah,
and you know, there really isn't anybody in that kind of situation that can step in. Troy Smith has to execute. Boom. This is not between the ears. This is, you know, this is somebody who's got to take that next step if you're going to be a starting quarterback. Montreal forever, since they came back from Baltimore, had Tracy Ham, and then they had Anthony Calvillo. They did not have to deal with what every other franchise in the league has had to do. They didn't have Jason Gesser running around, if you will.
Yeah.
So now welcome to the club, Alouettes. Welcome to what everybody else has had to go through. And now, you know, they have to decide whether or not Troy Smith can be the guy moving forward. If they see enough upside in him that he can remain their starting quarterback, and that's a question only internally they can answer.
Would you have let me ask you this. When you heard that Tom Higgins was going to be their head coach, was that an odd hire? How would you have described it at the time?
Well, I mean, it was a lot of it was odd. Nothing perhaps more odd than the fact that the general manager of the team wasn't the one making the hire. The timing of it. I mean, look how late in the process that happened. Mm-hmm. On top of that, Higgins hires an offensive coordinator who doesn't even make it out of training camp. And you don't have a quarterback. And, you know, now on top of that, you know, Jeff Parrott was hurt and a bunch of other things. So this has been an Alouette team on the downslide for a little while, if you really want to peel back some layers and look at it. Yes, they won the... You know, yes, they won the championships with Mark Trestman, but even in Trestman's last year, they have the bye into the East Final, they lose. The next year, they regress from the one seed in the East. Last season, remember, they were the three seed in the East. They had the coaching change. They go into Hamilton and lose, and now this. You know, Ottawa's going to likely end up the poorest team in the East Division just because they don't have a lot of depth on that roster. But there are a lot of warning signs here in Montreal, guys, that the things are going downhill, and they're going downhill fast. And that's not a very young team in a lot of spots. Jeff Parrott, Josh Bork, Chip Cox, Billy Parker. I mean, there are a lot of veterans on that team. And so what do you do? And that's going to be the big question that they're going to have to answer early and often throughout this season.
Arash Manati is our CFL insider here on your Monday morning. We can get to it. The Stampeders and Hamilton Ticats. Ticats come in with their second or third string quarterback, however you want to look at it, and Jeremiah Mazzoli. The Stampeders have been rolling to this point, and all things, even without John Cornish and even without some, you know, Daron Mayo or Keon Raymond in the linebacking core, it still seemed like this one was really set up well for the Calgary Stampeders. In a way, they kind of sneak one out. I don't know that it was ever in danger, although the Ticats did have a chance to tie it there late in the fourth quarter. But 10-7, an off day in a sense for Bo Levi Mitchell. In the first game this season, we've really seen what not having Cornish in that lineup means.
Yeah, and guys, they're not getting Cornish back, as you know, anytime soon. I mean, that's really where the alarm bells are ringing here. And I get where you're going with the team, but let's just touch on the most outstanding player in the league right now having a setback after that concussion. And so now you wonder when you may get him back, and you appreciate what the Stampeders are doing, being very patient with him. You also wonder if he was just another American who was fighting for his job, or whether or not he, you know, the player would put himself in this situation. But look, he's an integral part of what they do, and on top of that, with Price and Lewis and their injury situations throughout the season, it hasn't been easy. So they're almost in the same situation as what the Argos, what we were just talking about, with three of their top guns missing. In a lot of ways, the Stampeders have been behind the eight ball, too, from that personnel standpoint, but they found a way. And, you know, to me, there's not a lot of concern that they only put up 10 points and that, you know, they barely won, because they won, and... You know, at some point, you're going to get these guys back. But I just, you know, not to get too off topic here, but I remember sitting in Keith Primo's house, big, powerful, strong Keith Primo, just a few years ago, who now can't even break his sweat because of the concussions he had and the impact it had on the brain. We're talking about brain trauma and brain damage. That's what John Cornish suffered in that hellacious hit from Kyrie Zabair. And so... At least they're going to be cautious with him, and if it means he's going to miss a couple extra games, fine. The Stamps found a way. They'll find a way without him. But that's, to me, those are some real big alarm bells when somebody like Cornish is going to miss some more time.
And it's an interesting dynamic because you have John Cornish, who's out with a concussion, and his offensive coordinator had to leave the game because of concussions. I wonder, for Dave Dickinson, he's your biggest weapon, how, you know, that line you got to ride. And they're not going to put him in unless he's 100%. I understand that. But even for Dave Dickinson to sit there and watch this guy and know what he's going through.
And I'm sure there are some days where... Yeah, and I can't speak for Dave Dickens himself, but I can speak for other former athletes that I've covered who have some real dark days. And, you know, the symptoms, the after effects of concussions are real tough. At least there's the relatability factor. But make no mistake about it. I'm not speaking to the Cornish situation specifically, but I once talked to a neurologist who told me, I wish I could get a cast for the head. Because, you know, when a guy suffers brain trauma, from the outside, you see him walking around, nobody really knows what he's going through. You know, if you break your leg or you dislocate your shoulder or elbow, you have a sling, you have a cast, someone will come up to you and say, what the heck's wrong with you? With a concussion, you look fine. There's, you know, and so a lot of people say, hey, you look great. You got to come back. We need you. You feel the pressure as a leader, as a big money guy that, you know, I want to contribute. But, you know, you just watch your team barely win. You feel like it's on you. You feel that responsibility to deliver, and you're just, and your body is not right, and the impact and damage you can make can be, you know, life altering. So you applaud the Stampeders, you applaud Cornish for taking the cautious route with this, and you just hope, excuse me, just hope at some point it's going to come around for him, because that's a significant long term life health risk and issue that he's facing and is going to face.
We, you actually were the one that first put it on my radar after this hit happened. You said, yeah, the league probably should do something very significant here, but they will not. Is it the CBA? Is it the league being the league? Why have we not seen them cracking down on star players' retaliatory hits that are intended to hurt, to injure, I should say? This is just baffling to me, a guy that hasn't followed the league as closely as you have.
Well, it's the nature of discipline in the CFL. It's real tough to suspend somebody, and the reason why is because if a player appeals that, there's a real good chance the way the language in the CBA is written, and is that there's a very good chance that that can be then appealed, and the player will just get off without any penalty. So the maximum fine you can give a player is half a game check. And if you effectively then, you know, fine a guy once or twice to the maximum and build a file on him, then at, you know, then when you suspend him, you can say, look, this has been a pattern, this has been how he's been reckless, etc., at such an arbitration hearing. Hebert, for a guy who flies around and is quite a reckless hitter and a big hitter, does not have that file. And so now that's what you're doing. If we really go back to when Tom Higgins was coaching, for instance, in Calgary, Jason Jimenez ended Anthony Gargiulo's career, a Calgary defensive lineman, on just a vicious, dirty, ugly, ruthless, needless hit. But the league couldn't suspend him because they knew if they suspended him, he could overturn it, and, you know, and there wasn't enough film evidence. And then what happened is Jimenez took out Brent Johnson's knee a few years later. Again, Mark Cohan didn't suspend him because he knew that there wasn't going to be enough evidence. It's brutal. It's a terrible situation. But then on the flip side, you look at just the very situation. The BC Lions just put up 41 points on Hebert's defense, so it's not like he's making much of an impact anyway.
Appreciate it, buddy. Have yourself a good week. Should be a good one already, even though without John Cornish. Thursday, short week for both the Eskimos and the Stampeders, and already Chris Jones has the closed to the media, closed to the public practice. I wondered if Huff was going to go there, and maybe he will still, but it's already on in Edmonton.
Chris Jones and John Huffnagel going at it again. It's going at it for a first, I should say, as you know, head coaches. That should be... There's a subplot right there in the whole storyline, isn't there?
Now, here's the thing, and I'll ask you this. When Chris Jones left and went to Toronto, what was the scenario there? Because I know there was bad blood. There wasn't the permission to negotiate type of a thing that was granted. It certainly rubbed people in Calgary the wrong way.
Yeah, and that was all such a schmoz about the whole permission thing and whatnot. I mean, look. This is the CFL. The internal tampering goes on all the time. It had happened before in many organizations. Perhaps even along the way, John Huffnagel had talked to somebody else under contract as well. Who was under contract as well. But the bigger issue there, why the Stampeders went at it, was at some point with any working relationship, especially in coaching, you reach an expiry point. Chris Jones' time with the Calgary Stampeders, in his mind, had just expired. He wanted to move on. He wanted to work with his buddy Scott Milanovich. He's friends with Jim Barker. He was going to get a promotion, on and on and on. And just the process in which it went through, you know, Jones, by going to Toronto, Jones kind of gave his shot to the Stampeders, and the Stampeders returned the favor with that, you know, minuscule fine and making it a public a public schmozzle. That's all that was. That's all that was. No more, no less.
Just that's right.
A bunch of a bunch of grown men behaving like children for a little while, and then they turn the page.
Yeah, nothing to see here. Just move on. Exactly. Hey, appreciate it, pal. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
All right, boys.
There is Arash Madani, our CFL insider, at length. Obviously, lots to get through on week number four. So the Stamps will get ready for the Eskimos. But yes, bad news coming yesterday from John Huffnagel, as John Cornish has suffered a setback. The headaches have returned. Short week to begin with. You have to wonder if he was going to be in any shape to go. Thursday night up at Commonwealth, he looks like he will be a spectator as opposed to a participant in that matchup. We'll take a break. When we come back, Rob Laird will join us. We are out here at Pinebrook Golf and Country Club today. It is the fundraising, the 18th annual fundraising golf tournament for Recovery Acres Society. The 1835 House. What is the 1835 House? We'll let you know exactly what it is and why we feel it's important to be here today and support a great cause when we come back with Rob Laird. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.